Hello and welcome to Ag PhD Radio, broadcasting from the Morton Studio today. We're talking about prepay and the risks and benefits associated with that. Hearing a lot of farmers around the country that we're talking to on a daily basis saying, man, it's going to be a big year for prepay, not because financial situations are so awesome, but because they're nervous about prices going up in spring. And we're going to talk about that and just a number of other things around prepay. Got my brother Brian along with me today, but out in the country a little bit today. Brian, what are you hearing about prepay from farmers you're talking to?
Well, I'm hearing that a lot of guys are going to wait to do something until after the first of the year. And I was just meeting with a group of farmers earlier today, and I said, guys, I wouldn't wait. Every day now, literally every day, I'm hearing about another product that's going up and another one and another one. So at least be getting your order in, work out your deal with your dealer, and then pay the bill after the first of the year if that's when you want your prepay to go. If you don't need it for tax reasons, just get it done by January 2nd, and hopefully you can lock those prices in. Because, yes, we are very concerned with the tariffs that are going on with our deal with China. And you know, it's easy to think about, and everybody's talking about, the problem with our soybean pricing because China doesn't want to buy our beans now that they have tariffs on their end. But what a lot of people are forgetting about is the tariffs on our side of things, and that most of the crop protection products used in the United States today have come from China, or at least part of them have come from China. We get a lot of raw materials out of China, and then those go into our finished goods here. Well, if the cost of the raw materials are up, then obviously the finished goods costs are going to be up. And so what that's doing is it's pushing costs up for a lot of crop protection products. So I did this huge analysis here the other day of about 1,100 items that I got pricing on already this winter, and about half of them are up from last year. And the problem is a lot of these other ones that aren't up, and even some of the ones that have gone up, it looks like they're going to go up more by spring and certainly by next summer if the tariffs remain on. And the problem is, even if we get our deal worked out with China between, you know, here in the next couple months, well, some of these products have had to be brought in looking at supplies already for 2020. So if costs are up, then we're going to pay more for a lot of these products. So I just have been really encouraging guys, do something now. Even if you don't normally prepay, you need to get it done here in December or early January to get your best overall deal.
All right, so that's what we're talking about today is prepay, and I get it. There's some pretty good reasons to do it, but there are also some risks that you need to be aware of. And while the money is still in your pocket and you haven't given it to a dealer somewhere, whether it's a seed dealer or chemical dealer, whatever, you've got the power, and you need to ask the right questions. So what are some of the big questions, Brian, that you would suggest farmers ask of their dealers to make sure they don't get themselves in a bad spot?
Well, the most important question is your money safe? So if you're worried about that, the easy solution is just simply take product home, and then you have no risk other than, you know, you need to insure that product once you put it in your shed. But, I mean, that's the big worry. And especially if you're doing something with a company that you don't really know very well, you're not sure if you can trust them, they don't necessarily have real great-looking financials, or if you don't even check their financials, then, yeah, that's a big, big concern. Now, beyond that, the smaller things would be things like, okay, what happens if the price goes down? How about any rebate programs that come out? Am I eligible for those? How about returns? What if I need to switch products? So all those types of things are more minor questions, but still they are important questions depending on how things go for you this year.
Well, you mentioned that there's a possibility prices are going to go up, and you're already seeing some prices go up on certain products. What about short supply items? I mean, there's probably some items that dealers may even advise the farmers. There's a few things that are short. You might just want to take those home, and that really protects you from a lot of things you talk about. You don't really care about the financial stability of the dealer. If you can take your product home with you that day that you paid for, you're in good shape, right?
Right, exactly, and that's what I said. But in terms of short supply products, no, there aren't very many. There are only maybe four or five products I can think of off the top of my head where I say, yep, I would be awfully worried about that. So metribuzin would be one, germoxone would be another, some of the maybe post-emerge grass killers, if there's a specific one you like, you know, those are all possibilities, especially the Metribuzin. But, I mean, it's just not a real huge deal. We've got other options out there, and there is supply on a lot of things. So as long as you're doing something here in December or January, I'm not too worried that you're not going to find the crop protection product that you want. But certainly, come in season, that is a possibility.
All right, so here's the other thing that makes it a little bit tricky this year. I was just talking with a farmer this morning who said, you know, I was going to go all corn, but now I've got some hope in the beans again. I might go 50-50. And he had already prepaid for all corn. And so the question was, well, have you got any soybeans locked up yet? And he said, well, no, I got to go work that out with my dealer and see if I can get my money back because I want to buy beans from a different dealer. And it gets pretty tricky if you can't get your money back. So to me, that's one of the things, too, that I want to ask before I write that check is, look, if things change, can I get my money back? Or if I just can't get my crop in, can I have my money back? Because right. I know from experience, some dealers are like, no, you're going to have to wait till next year and use it up in product.
That's what I was going to say. It's not only can I get my money back, it's when can I get my money back, and are you going to pay me interest on that money since you've had it for a few months? So, I mean, those are all important things to talk about. But again, if you got product, you have it in your shed, then at least you know you're not out anything, but it could create an issue for you. You might have your money tied up for quite a while. You might have to work some deal out with your neighbor to take some of your product or something like that. Because yeah, if you can't just return the product, get your money back right away and then go spend it somewhere else, it's going to cause a little issue.
Well, it is an interesting year here, 2018 going into 2019. There are certainly some big discounts that different suppliers are offering. And if you say, wow, I could save 10% versus buying the same thing in spring that I know I'm going to use, that's pretty enticing. So as you look at prepaying different inputs for next year's crop, I want to talk about the risks and also the benefits of doing that prepay business. We'll also be taking your calls and questions throughout the show at 844-44 Ag PhD. Stay with us. We'll be right back.
Want to turn smart agronomics into smart economics? Go with the all-new Grow Smart Rewards program. 1. Start with a smart agronomic plan. 2. Qualify with the purchase of a participating BASF herbicide. 3. Earn $1+ per acre for each qualifying pair-up brand. Plus, you may qualify for an additional $75 per gallon back on our industry-leading fungicides. For full program details, go to growsmartrewards.com. Grow smart with BASF.
Clean fields and higher yields start with a strong battle plan. For soybean growers, there's no stronger ally than Sonic herbicide. When applied pre-emerge, Sonic is proven to defeat yield robbers like water hemp, mare's tail, and giant ragweed. With long-lasting residual control, it keeps fighting to defend your field from invaders. Visit battleweeds.com to plan your attack against weeds. Always read and follow label directions.
Sir, yes, sir!
Your independent spirit is more rewarding than ever before. Unlike incentive programs that require growers to purchase a particular seed brand or to bundle certain products, the FMC Freedom Pass program rewards you for making the best choices for your fields. You decide what's best for your operation, from pre-plant to harvest. Your retailer and FMC take care of the rest. It's really that simple. The exclusive agronomic rewards, performance assurances, application innovations, and product financing of the FMC Freedom Pass program make it easier to protect your crops and cash flow. That's what we mean when we say we give you more freedom in the field. You'll experience more control and confidence, too. Generics and imitators can't promise that. Visit your authorized FMC retailer or FMCFreedomPass.com to calculate your potential financial incentive and learn more.
Welcome back. You're listening to Ag PhD Radio, broadcasting from the Morton Studio today, taking your calls and questions at 844-44-AG-PHD. I want to invite Scott Harms with Grain PhD on as well. Scott, how are you doing today?
I'm doing very well, Darren. How are you?
I'm doing pretty well, too. We're getting a lot of questions about growers prepaying inputs and these types of things, and we're certainly doing that on our farm as well. But one of the things that's influencing that is that there's some positive developments going on in regards of sales to China. So just kind of wondering, what are you hearing about that? Because I'm talking to farmers on a daily basis saying, you know, I might switch some acres back to beans if we get this China thing worked out.
Yeah, it's a moving target, no doubt. And there's definitely been an improvement on that front. We went from rumors to speculation. Now we've got some actual sales on the books the last 2 weeks. And they're made with the Chinese government. The good news is the last two sales that were announced were in the top 10 of all-time sales announced on a daily basis, pushing our annual sales to China just over 3 million metric tons. But the bad news is that a year ago we had 21 million metric tons on the books to China. So we have a long way to go. It's a start, and the market is certainly being buoyed by that. You know, we're probably going to need some help, at least as far as extending any price gains. You're going to probably need some help from South American weather. But, you know, just more and more announcements. We just need to keep the ball rolling. Negotiations are going to continue between both countries to end the tariffs that are in place. So the tariffs are still on the books. The recent sales, again, as I said, were made to the government, not by the private importers. But there's an expectation that more products are going to be going to China. I was surprised to hear that corn was on their shopping list. They're trying to, you know, they've got plenty of supply of corn, but the quality is a concern. In addition, ethanol, sorghum, and DDGs are also products that they're going to be looking to purchase. So the market's going to react to that news as it becomes available. You know, with the lighter volume that we see around the holidays, you know, a well-placed export announcement on the right day with the right buyers in the marketplace could provide a nice little pop to prices.
Well, you talk about that, and here we go. We've got the markets kind of going into holiday mode, and I know a lot of the traders, I mean, they've got families. They're just people like all the rest of us where they're going to go home and maybe do some travel to get to different places and so forth. And so from a farmer standpoint, I know a lot of us on the farm think, well, if everybody else is going on vacation, I guess maybe I don't have to watch the market so close. But are there some opportunities here to make some money and you know, maybe catch one of those days where we get some good news?
Yeah, I think no question. History tells us, I mean, holiday mode typically means we're going to have a lot of, like you say, the players that are normally in the marketplace are going to shut it down for a year, you know, the fun guys, you know, they've maybe closed their books and they're just going to look forward to 2019. That can both be good and bad. I mean, it could leave the market in a sideways pattern where there's not a lot of price swings to the market. And that, you know, is probably the scenario most times. But 2 years ago, we had 2 days after Christmas, we had a 9-cent rally in corn and a 25-cent rally to beans. So the lack of these players in the market means that if there is some positive news and we get the aggressive buyers in there, those normal sellers that are there to cap a rally aren't necessarily going to be there, so we can get the market to move a little further. Now it could go the other way as well, unfortunately. But I think producers need to, you know, what they should do is reach out to their cash merchandiser or their broker and place a couple wish orders in before they shut it down. You know, have those, because opportunities can present themselves. We don't know if they're going to happen, but you know, if we get a jumpy market, in case there's some major sales announcement made during these quiet times, you know, get those orders in there, wish orders in above the market, then step away, take a break, and spend time with family.
All right, so 2018, we already kind of talked about what's going on with China a little bit, and it certainly disrupted our export markets and really impacted our pricing. I know you don't have a crystal ball, Scott, but what do you see as we look into 2019? Are these trade issues going to be something that comes up on an annual basis? Is this something where we're looking for some long-term deals? And really, what should farmers, as they're planning on which crops to plant, what should they look for next year?
Yeah, I was thinking about this the other day. I mean, I'm starting my 30th year in the business, and I've never had a year like this. I mean, to have this big of a trade disruption from outside, you know, from our government, then the Chinese government, and the ability or lack of ability to predetermine that or estimate, you know, what the impact would be and how long it would last was certainly a real challenge. 2018 got off to a real good start. We had a nice solid rally. And then the rumors of the trade battle hit, and the market digested that pretty well. It was almost like the market didn't know how to handle it, so it just ignored it. And that worked for a time until the trade dispute derailed the market in late May and early June. And it was a hard time to make marketing decisions because you didn't know whether the trade issues were going to last 5 days or 5 weeks or 5 months, as it turned out. But, this had farmers stuck in a bit of a market paralysis as market slipped lower and lower. So I think as we look forward, I think there's going to be some real good pricing opportunities here in the next 5 months. I've long held that the corn production number that we currently are using is going to slip lower in the January production report. That's a couple weeks into the new year, and that should provide a boost. That's also going to drop, the carryover estimate. And we could, and if soybean prices don't slip lower, you mentioned earlier, farmers may be thinking about planting more beans next year. Well, they can do that at these price levels and make it work. And if they don't slip, or if they even go up further, the corn market is hoping to pick up at least 3 million acres next year. 3 to 5 would be more comfortable. But if they're able only to pick up 2 to 3 million acres from the soybeans next year due to higher soybean prices, you get a corn carryover estimate around 1.6 billion bushel, and then you have any kind of weather problem next year, you could have a corn carryover estimate closer to a billion bushel, and it could be, certainly, a very interesting time. So, Grain PhD was designed, to help, educate farmers and provide resources for farmers in the area of grain marketing. And you can get quotes and research and study guides from the CME, from that website. And in addition, you can use the GrainBridge software. And you talked about plugging in numbers, you can plug into your cost of production into the Grain PhD, run some what-if scenarios, and help you out with those. Those acreage decisions, depending on what prices do and what your input costs are going to do. As we look forward to 2019, we're always looking for ways to help farmers with better information. In the coming months, we're going to be introducing, hopefully, a model farm that farmers can follow along with at Grain PhD and plug in the GrainBridge software and some of the pricing decisions, marketing decisions that are made. Perhaps it can help farmers, see how it would impact their operation if they did something similar. So, I kind of hope that farmers get out in front of marketing here early in the season and improve their marketing, and Grain PhD is a great way to start. Remember, they can always, give us a call for a one-on-one consult if they want to go that route. So,
hey,
Grain PhD, we want to wish everyone a Merry Christmas.
Absolutely. Thanks, Scott. We got another minute here, and I wanted to ask you one more question. So we've got a lot of growers that are locking in some of their input costs here right at the end of the year or the very beginning of 2019. Is that the time to start locking in some grain sales, even if it's just a small percentage?
If you know your cost of production and you know that you can turn at least a profit, meet your profit objective, definitely lock that in. You always will have you'll have opportunities down the road if you want to alter that plan. But at least lock that in. There's no sense locking in the cost if you don't lock in. If you're at your profit objective, no reason not to lock that in. You can always adjust your plan later if another opportunity presents itself.
Yeah, I know we've made the mistake in years past of locking in a lot of input costs, and then we forgot to lock in the grain at the same time because we were bullish. I'll admit it. We thought, oh, no, it's still going up. But in the meantime, we could have locked in a profit and then still rode the market higher too. And so you can do some of those things, and Grain PhD is a great way to find out some strategies that you can implement for your farm. I've been talking with Scott Harms, and Scott, Merry Christmas to you and the whole Grain PhD team as well. Really appreciate having you on.
Yeah, absolutely.
All right, we're talking about prepay today, and I think that was important and a good way to start with. If you're locking in these input costs, think about what your grain sales should be if you know what your cost of production is going to be, and that's what we're doing. We don't know exactly how many bushels we're going to raise, but you got a pretty good idea of, hey, here's kind of what an average year is, and I'm going to be maybe plus or minus 10% depending on how the weather turns out. Why not protect at least a portion of that? We're going to dig into some more of these input costs and where you may want to prepay this year on today's Ag PhD Radio. Stay tuned.
In farming, getting things done early has a way of setting you up for success. Like using Corvus for an early season win over weeds. Corvus keeps even the toughest weeds from gaining a foothold. Multiple sites of action deliver superior control of emerged weeds. And later, Corvus reactivates with just a half inch of rain to take out any new weeds that may have sprouted. So get an early season win against weeds with Corvus for end of season rewards.
Always read and follow label instructions. Corvus is a restricted-use pesticide.
No two seasons are the same, so you need your crops to rise ready for whatever's in store. Now, there's one simple decision that provides coverage on four fronts. The Acceleron portfolio offers protection against disease, insects, nematodes, and even moisture or nutrient stress. In the fight against the unpredictable, rise stronger with Acceleron seed treatment products. Learn more at AcceleronSAS.com/rise ready. Performance may vary. It's important to use proper PPE when handling treated seed.
In farming, there's a lot of variables out of our control. Don't let fertility be one of them. Let the experts at AgroLiquid move you closer to your bullseye. It's true. AgroLiquid fertilizers are formulated to keep nutrients available to your crop, and they have unmatched compatibility with other nutrients and crop protection products, which makes application more efficient than ever. But we also have the best people in the field, ready to talk about your operation, your goals. Go to AgroLiquid.com to move you closer to your target.
You need a powerful herbicide to fight the war on weeds. Bellum is Rotam North America's mesotrione herbicide, and it fights against the annual broadleaf weeds attacking your cornfields. Winning this battle means higher yields, lower cost to you, and maximized profitability. For long-lasting residual weed control, check out Evinco Vilify and our newest mix, Rixa. For application, flexibility, and season-long control, that's Evinco Vilify and Rixa, powered by Bellum. For more information, visit bellumherbicide.com. That's B-E-L-L-U-M herbicide.com.
In order to be the best farmer you can be, you've got to have a grain marketing plan. But what do you do when you're too busy out in the fields trying to maximize yield? Hi, I'm Darren Hefty. My brother Brian and I are always busy learning more about how to make our farm more successful. That's why we use Grain PhD. To learn more about grain marketing and to work with our Grain PhD risk expert to create a complete grain marketing strategy, visit grainphd.com to learn more about a free consultation for your operation.
In 1949, Morton Buildings constructed our first machine storage building to establish our bond with the farming community. Since then, our relationship has grown, and so have our product offerings. From the smallest specialized operation to the largest agricultural enterprise, we understand the needs of your business and continue to evolve to meet industry demands. Plus, when you build a Morton building, you're backed by the strongest warranty in the business. To learn more about the Morton Advantage, visit us online at mortonbuildings.com.
Welcome back. You're listening to Ag PhD Radio, broadcasting from the Morton Studio today, and we're talking about prepay and looking at some of the risks and some of the benefits, and certainly there are some big benefits with prepaying different inputs if you know what you're looking for. And we've got Galen Beer with us right now with AgroLiquid. And Galen, we're hearing a pretty good uptick on prepay, whether it's right before or right after the first of the year this year, as there's some pretty aggressive programs out there and guys are kind of fired up going into next year.
Yeah, I think historically you're going to see, hello, Darren, but historically we're seeing, if you buy earlier, a lot of times the demand isn't as great. So you got a little more leverage to get the good buys. You probably got a little bit better room to negotiate with your supplier. Obviously, as you get closer to growing season, it's harder to negotiate because now you're pressed into a decision. And so I always encourage guys, especially if they're like taking advantage of the marketing side of things and locking their income in, okay, now you really got to take a hard look and get some of those inputs looked in. And fertilizer is a major input into crop production, so you definitely need to evaluate how you're going to spend those dollars and get them locked in.
You know, one of the challenges this year, Galen, is there's a lot of farmers that wanted to get some fall fertility work done, and then, of course, we got the fall of 2018, which was wet, and it got cold really early. There was kind of an earlier than normal freeze-up for many of the growers that we talked to, and they say, I didn't get any fertility done. Normally, I would pay for that and apply some in the fall. I didn't get any of that done, so I'm still in the market for fertility. So what do you advise for farmers that say, I'm going into needing spring fertility at planting? How do I best go about that?
You know, that everyone kind of has different programs they'll offer. We do recognize that, a lot of guys are in that situation. We actually have at our company right now two programs that allow guys to lock in
you know, prices and allow for spring delivery. One is our 25% down program, which we're generously allowing people to only put down 25% of the order and lock the price in for 100% of that order with delivery by the end of April. And then we have another one that they can put 100% down and lock in their price as a known. We'll store it for them. We'll deliver it in the spring, and they have until the end of June to take that delivery. So we're trying to be flexible, and I think a lot of suppliers are. It's just a hard balance because you're committing yourself to that spring delivery, and with enough delayed decisions, logistically, that can be challenging. But again, it's something that we're offering. We feel like we're equipped with our storage sites and manufacturing to meet that demand. And so that's something we've got offered out there.
Well, that's a good point, Galen. And for a lot of farmers, we see putting up storage facilities, whether it be for seed or even for fertilizer, where they have some tanks around. So they've got, you know, at least a few days worth of supply. That way they aren't in such a pinch in the spring when they start rolling, they can order the next load in, and they've still got quite a few gallons to go on. And, you know, as you think about that, on-farm storage, let's say a farmer today said, you know, I was going to use a little more dry, now I'm going to end up using liquid because I'm doing it in the spring. Can he get set up with some on-farm storage by next spring, whether it be on a semi-trailer that he's going to haul right to the field or something that he's going to put in one of his buildings?
Yeah, definitely. And, you know, you bring up a couple of good points there. One is you got to have some buffering capacity on hand. You know how it is with today's planters and the higher planting speeds and things like that. You can think you have a 3-day supply of fertilizer. All of a sudden it's going to rain. You plant 24 hours a day and you're trying to get fertilizer in the middle of the night. So hey, you don't have to store all of your fertilizer you're going to need, but like you mentioned, storing a couple days worth to give you that little time of buffering there is good so that you don't shut down that valuable planting process. The other end of that is in order to get those tanks, we actually do. You mentioned a guy who uses dry, now he wants to use liquid. Well, we understand that there is a cost associated with that switch. And so with dry, you're not storing it. With liquid, yes, you need to store that to have it at, you know, kind of at your fingertips when you're ready to use it. So we actually have on-farm tank storage programs. Obviously, that comes with a purchase requirement, but when people are ordering their planter time fertilizer, you know, we will cost share tanks. And so all they need to do is get with their local agro liquid supplier, and we can kind of walk everyone through that process and make sure all the I's are dotted and the T's are crossed for that. But we do recognize that as a cost. We want them to have that storage. We want them to keep that planter rolling. So we're willing to invest along with that farmer.
You know, another thing, Galen, that's come up is what are you going to plant next year? And we've talked to a lot of farmers over the last couple of months that it's, well, I might go a little heavier on corn. And then some guys are saying, you know, I'm probably going to shift some acres back to beans now. And we still got spring fertility work to do, whether it's corn or soybeans. A lot of times we're using some of the same products. But with soybeans, we need to be probably a little more off the row with at least a portion of that fertility. What do you see for these guys that say, okay, I'm going to plant corn and I'm going to plant soybeans and I've got this set up on my planter? How would you handle that if you're a corn and soybean farmer? How would you like to be set up?
Yeah, I would do like you guys recommend, kind of use my soil test as my guide and prioritize, you know, the nutrients, whether that be phosphorus or potassium, and then maybe some micros. As you mentioned, soybeans, any oil crop is pretty sensitive to the placement of fertilizer. So while you might run 6 or 7, 8 gallons in for a one of corn crop, we're going to need to scale that back to 3 gallons in furrow on 30-inch rows on soybeans so that we don't injure the germination of that crop. Now, what you do have the option to do on soybeans is you can go in there with some foliar application. So the potassium component, it goes into the plant very well. Some micros like manganese and boron can be applied at that time. So while you have to scale back that planter time application, you actually can come back over the top with some applications on soybeans, where we probably don't recommend that strategy as much on corn. We'd rather have it placed at the plant's feet there.
Yeah, certainly a lot of things to think about going into next spring, and there are a tremendous amount of deals out there. Right now, we mentioned a few of them on liquid fertilizer, whether it's a pricing protection type program or on-farm storage programs. These are things that, you know, questions that you need to ask as you're looking at prepaying this winter here around the first of the year. Been talking with Galen Beer with AgriLiquid. Galen, thank you so much. Really appreciate having you on, and Merry Christmas.
Hey, Merry Christmas. We'll talk to you later, Darren.
You bet. I've got Charles down in Oklahoma with us right now. Charles, how are you doing today?
How are you?
Doing pretty well. Doing pretty well. What I understand you got a question for us on some potash.
Well, last week we are on the sand right next to the Arkansas River, and we were running a land leveler getting ready to re-sprig in the spring, and we put out potash, and then before we could get it filled in at all, it came like a 2.5-inch rain. It was laid there for about 24 hours. Do you think it washed?
Well, that's a good question. So the potash was laying on top of the ground. You got a 2.5-inch rain, and is there a lot of slope to that ground?
Well, there's not a lot, but we had standing water, you know, and it washed into, there's, you know, it's not a foot of fall, but there's fall.
Yeah, I think potash is a pretty stable nutrient. I mean, if you said it was urea, I'd be really nervous. But with potash, it's a pretty hard granule. It's hard to know. I mean, I'd certainly go make some observations and maybe even pull a soil sample just to see where stuff's at. But I can't imagine 1-2.5-inch rain, as long as it didn't wash away with the river. This is just standing water on a field, or this is the river came up.
Yeah. No, the standing water in the fields, but, you know, there's low spots. The water went to the low spots and stood.
Sure, sure. Now, it's possible it could have washed some of...
And what do you think about phosphorus in the same example?
Well, I'm really worried about phosphorus getting into groundwater. That's a concern, but as long as it's not washing away out of the field, if it's just staying in the field, then I'm not as concerned. The phosphorus would move down through the soil with water less than what the potassium would move. But with just 1-2.5-inch rain, I can't imagine it'll be a big problem. I do get your concern, though, and it may have washed a little bit more into those low spots, but I don't think it moved as much as you think unless that water was really running across the field.
Okay, we normally sprig in late March, all of April and May.
Hey, Charles, just one second here. We're up against a break. Let me put you back on hold for 1 second. We'll get to you right after this short break. Stay tuned. You're listening to Ag PhD Radio.
For over a year, I've been butchering the scripts for the Farmer's Edge ads on my podcast. But hey, it's not my fault. Honestly, they offer too much stuff. On-farm weather stations, that little plastic data transfer thingy they shove in your tractor's port, daily satellite imagery, their integrated farm management software, soil sampling, variable rate technology, it goes on and on and on. And they expect me to do that in one ad. That's why I just say Farmer's Edge. It's a company developed by an agronomist to help make you a better farmer.
Want to cut production costs without losing yield? Brian Ryberg from Buffalo Lake, Minnesota has done just that. Here's his story.
We began using a soil warrior on our farm the fall of 2014. We've seen many benefits from better water infiltration, a lot less hours on equipment, fuel, able to reduce our fertilizer side. So it's really simplified our operation.
See what makes Soil Warrior different and better at soilwarrior.com.
It's tough to keep your stored soybeans in perfect condition. To maintain beans at 13% moisture, you need to run your bin fans when outside air humidity is at 70%. For 12% moisture, you need to run at 65%. For 11, 60. How can you possibly get the timing right yourself if you don't know the humidity at your bin site and aren't there to switch on your fans? The Steps GMS Temperature Humidity Switch is your low-cost solution. For more information, visit us at stepsgms.com.
White mold, sudden death syndrome, root rot. If you raise soybeans, it may seem like you have all the cards stacked against you when it comes to disease. But did you know there is a new cost-effective seed treatment which can help prevent all three? Heads Up Seed Treatment offers a new proactive approach for dealing with fungal and bacterial diseases. Compatible with other seed treatments, hedge your bet against disease this spring. Ask your dealer for Heads Up today. To locate a dealer, visit headsupst.com.
Are you combining around weed patches, waiting for weeds to dry down, or tired of spring burndown failures? Save time, nutrients, and moisture by including a Valor herbicide brand in your fall burndown program. Valor provides excellent residual control of tough weeds, including kochia, mare's tail, prickly lettuce, dandelion, plus suppression of bromes. Proactive, effective weed resistance management starts in the fall. Get a clean start for your next season with Valor Herbicide Brands. Always read and follow label directions.
Ideal for herbicide applications, the Ultra Low Drifts Large Air Inducted Droplets were designed to eliminate driftable fines without sacrificing coverage. Its thick three-dimensional pattern creates multiple angles for the spray to cover the target. Hypro, helping you spray better.
Interested in strip tillage? You should know about the Soil Warrior from ETS. With one-pass efficiency, optimized nutrient placement, and reduced production costs for higher profitability, the Soil Warrior brings the future to your farm. Visit SoilWarrior.com to learn more.
Thanks for listening to Ag PhD Radio today. I'm Darren Hefty, broadcasting from the Morton Studio. Just before our break, we were talking to Charles down in Oklahoma. They just got some potash on, didn't get a chance to work it in yet, and boom, they got a rain on some sandy soil. And although it doesn't sound like it ran off the field, just kind of concerned where it's at and what else is going on. Charles, what else is on your mind around that?
Well, my next question, you guys keep talking about putting your P and K down now for row cropping. In this sandy soil down here, is it okay to put it down now, or would you wait till February?
You know, that's a great question. We don't have a lot of time between now and February, so to me it probably isn't going to make much difference. We're only talking about a month, month and a half difference. Okay. How sandy is sandy? Do you know what your cation exchange capacity is by any chance?
I'm like 60% sand, 25% silty clay.
Okay.
I don't know the answer to the question you gave me.
Okay.
But
okay.
My next question is, last year we had a lot of quarter-inch rains, and we top-dressed a lot with P and K, and the sod didn't seem to be as strong as it normally was. Do you think top dressing is keeping it from making roots?
Well, definitely. These
during the growing season?
These are two nutrients that don't like to move very much in soil. Now, you've got some fairly sandy soil, so that's going to help you in this case getting nutrients to move. But, yeah, I like to get nutrients down a little bit deeper. Now, in sandy ground, probably not as deep as I would do in a heavier clay soil like we're farming. But in a sandy soil, I'd like to get stuff underneath the soil surface a little bit, down a few inches. And certainly as those roots hit the nutrient zones, they're going to expand in those zones. Now, in a year where you get a lot of really light rains, quarter inch, half inch kind of rains, well, that water doesn't move down in the soil very much, so there's no incentive for the roots to go down deep. They've got everything they need in the top inch.
Yeah, exactly. And we've been doing it 43 years, and it was some of the weakest Bermuda sod we've had in years.
Yeah, that's a challenge. I know, like for watering lawns, which would be a similar crop, we see people that are watering just real light waterings every day. And we end up creating a situation just like you're talking about where we don't have much for a deep root system, and then we get a couple hot days and we really struggle. We'd rather see deep waterings, and of course, if you're not irrigated, you got to pray for this, but you hope for those 2.5-inch rains, and you hope they come infrequently, and then the root system's going to get a little bit deeper, which I could only assume in a real sandy soil like that would be a really good thing for you, because it's probably going to dry out pretty quick up top.
We irrigate every night we can during the growing season, but to make a three-tower pivot, make a circle just during the darkness where evaporation isn't so bad, we're only getting down maybe 0.3 inch.
Okay. Yep.
So
yep.
Maybe not. Don't water as often and try. You know, you hate to make pivot tracks and make ruts, but.
Nope, I get it. I get it. If you've got irrigation, I mean, ideally, we'd put on heavier doses less frequently, and that lets our root system get a little bit deeper. But you've got to battle the conditions you've got. If it's 100 degrees and you're just trying to keep something alive, I think you're kind of stuck running it as fast as you can.
Right, exactly. And that's what we're up against. I mean, it's just, you're not growing grass, you're just keeping it alive, basically.
Right.
Waiting for the rain, good rains. But we just had really weak sod. But my neighbor said he puts down 200 pounds of triple 19 a month, so he doesn't get behind on his mowing. But I just wonder if that's not making the plant not want to root.
Interesting. You mean rather than putting in a big dose? I think in the sandy soil, though, you're kind of stuck because you've got to you kind of have to spoon feed because you're worried. You know, if you get one of those months where you get 10 inches of rain, where's the fertility going to be? A lot of it's going to be pushed down deep.
Yeah, too deep for us.
Yeah, it's tricky. I don't envy you. I mean, I like that you got irrigation, and I think that's a great way to go. I would do the same thing if I was you. It's just you don't know what nature's going to bring you at the same time, and if all of a sudden it just turns it on and forgets to turn it back off, like many areas ended up having in 2018, that can be a real problem.
Our problem was we just got a little rain. It didn't seem to root, and then, but we couldn't get in and mow and really fertilize right. You know what I mean?
Absolutely. Yep.
It was a tough year. Okay, well, I appreciate it. I was just wondering if you thought that potash moved on me.
You bet. Well, thanks a lot, Charles. Really appreciate the question. Have a Merry Christmas.
You as well.
We've got Scott Speck with us right now with Farmer's Edge. And Scott, I'm sure you see this every day that there's different weather from one farm to the next, and keeping track of that can really help with management.
Yeah, that's extremely right. I think conditions are so different everywhere you go. Even if it's on the north side of town compared to the south side of town, wherever you're at, you're going to see differences out there. And you're understanding what that weather is, and you're trying to make those decisions like we just heard, it can be a huge asset to have some real good, real efficient weather data coming in that's going to let you know what's going on a field-by-field basis.
Yeah, I can only imagine how valuable that would be when you're in control of irrigation as well, to fine-tune that and say, oh boy, that field that's 5 miles north, they got 3 inches of rain last night. I have no need for irrigation, but the other ground missed it. It'd be great. The sooner you know that, the better, and act on it quickly. One other thing I was thinking, Scott, we're talking about prepay today and some of the risks and benefits around prepay, and I was thinking about Christmas gifts, and I remember growing up, I was always looking for that tech gift. And now tech back when I was growing up maybe wasn't as cool as it is today, but there's some pretty cool tech gifts for farmers around Christmas. What do you see becoming more popular in terms of technology and the way farmers are setting up their equipment and farm management overall?
Yeah, great question. I know with ag technology, there's so many things that you could put on your wish list as Christmas approaches. There's so many awesome technologies that are out there to help focus on the profitability for the next season. I think one of the biggest things as we're moving into 2019, specifically around prepay itself, is just knowing where we're at agronomically for next year's season, but also being able to keep track of some of those records. So looking at farm management software, looking at ways to get that information into one spot, especially when you're looking at prepay. I think you're exactly right. There are risks and benefits to both sides. And if you have a good idea of what you're going to do for next year, what the plan is, what inputs am I going to need, which seeds am I going to purchase, you can start to take advantage of those different price changes as they move throughout the year, understand where those opportunities are to grab onto something with a little better price, but also be able to grab onto something at the end of next year that's going to be a little more profitable for you moving forward. So for me, I think, you know, when we look at that wish list for Christmas and the technology side, I really think the integration of all that information and technology is something that's a critical part of being able to make those decisions.
Well, I totally agree. We've got so much data on our farm, and the challenge is how do we pull it all together in time to make those smart decisions with what we learned this year. And the other thing, too, is on some of this with the local weather data, if we can say, wow, that field got 40 inches of rain, and it needs drainage enhancements. I don't know if I can really make any judgments over there, but this one over here, I can make some judgments on. Sorting through it all and seeing what's really relevant for me deciding things going forward is just super critical.
Yeah, absolutely. I was actually just looking at a couple fields earlier to the show today, just looking at some analytics sides of what performed well on each different farm and why was that. And it's so interesting seeing things like seed varieties, and you see some variation across the farm, and then you start to dig into that. Well, why was that? Was it because we had too much water or too little water, or the fertility program was different on that field, or we did get some more weather issues or disease pressure in that field? Just completely astounding to see that kind of information when you can easily click two times and see that kind of information instead of having a calculator out and a map and trying to figure everything out by hand, you can just get those insights so quickly. It just makes that decision making so much easier.
Yeah, I had a favorite hybrid. That one hit. That story hits home, Scott. Maybe you're looking at some of my fields, but one of my favorite corn hybrids this year, we figured out any field that we had it in that needed some more drainage work done, it looked awesome everywhere except about exactly where we were going to run some tie lines this fall, but we didn't get it done before the season. And wow, it easily took 20 bushels off really quick. There's no doubt about it. Been talking with Scott Speck with Farmer's Edge. Scott, thank you so much, and have a Merry Christmas.
You as well. Thanks for having me.
Talking about prepay on today's program and taking your calls and questions as well. Stay tuned. We'll be right back.
Clean fields and higher yields start with a strong battle plan. For soybean growers, there's no stronger ally than Sonic herbicide. When applied pre-emerge, Sonic has proven to defeat yield robbers like water hemp, mare's tail, and giant ragweed. With long-lasting residual control, it keeps fighting to defend your field from invaders. Visit battleweeds.com to plan your attack against weeds. Always read and follow label directions.
Sir, yes, sir!
High-yield corn growers know that feeding the crop and soil are keys to maximizing yield potential. Nutec's EDA and Reverb are specifically formulated to help manage limiting factors associated with today's farming conditions. Nutec's EDA works within the plant to support nutrient mobility and utilization. Reverb focuses on the soil, providing beneficial trace elements which help condition the root zone for optimal microbial activity. Low use rates and superb tank mix compatibility make Nutec's EDA and Reverb no-brainers in the high-yield grower toolbox.
Worried about glyphosate-resistant weeds and grasses in your corn? Unleash the power of new Impact Z herbicide and get the early post-application advantage you've been waiting for. Save $3 per acre when you combine Impact Z with a qualifying insecticide purchase. Go to buy2save3.com for details. Buy2save3 is a service mark, and Impact Z is a trademark owned by AMVAC Chemical Corporation. All rights reserved. Impact Z is a restricted-use pesticide. Always read and follow label instructions.
For over a year, I've been butchering the scripts for the Farmer's Edge ads on my podcast. But hey, it's not my fault. Honestly, they offer too much stuff. On-farm weather stations, that little plastic data transfer thingy they shove in your tractor's port, daily satellite imagery, their integrated farm management software, soil sampling, variable rate technology, it goes on and on and on. And they expect me to do that in one ad. That's why I just say, Farmer's Edge. It's a company developed by an agronomist to help make you a better farmer.
No secrets here. We all know, regardless of the markets, balanced crop nutrition pays. Agro-liquid fertilizers have the research, technology, and products you need to grow a great crop. We also have an outstanding team of field agronomists ready to help you determine the best use of your fertilizer dollar. Agro-liquid can help you maximize your yield potential effectively and economically. Visit agroliquid.com to find a dealer near you.
Are you combining around weed patches, waiting for weeds to dry down, or tired of spring burndown failures? Save time, nutrients, and moisture by including a Valor herbicide brand in your fall burndown program. Valor provides excellent residual control of tough weeds, including kochia, mare's tail, prickly lettuce, dandelion, plus suppression of bromes. Proactive, effective weed resistance management starts in the fall. Get a clean start for your next season with Valor herbicide brands. Always read and follow label directions.
You're listening to Ag PhD Radio, broadcasting from the Morton studio today, and we're talking about prepay and some of the risks and benefits. And Brian, just to go back through a couple of these points, and then we'll jump into the Ag PhD mailbag. You want to look for financial stability wherever you're prepaying. You want to make sure you don't lose your money there. You can always take product if you're nervous about that, or just pay for it and take it right home with you. That's one way to protect yourself. The other questions with prices likely to go up this season, that's important to get the prepaying done, but there may be some products that go down in price. You want to make sure you're checking to see, hey, if prices go down, do I get my money back on the difference? Do I have some price protection? Looking at the rebate programs this year, they're huge. And Brian, maybe you could comment on this one. I think the rebate programs are probably bigger this year than we've ever seen.
Well, I don't know about that, but
there's so many tie-ins. There's so many different products. Yeah.
Yeah, I know, but there actually have been for the last 3 or 4 years. When we've done our ag PhD workshops, we used to put all the rebate programs in this workshop book. The problem was the workshop book started being upwards of 150 pages. Over half of it was rebate programs. And we said, no, we're not doing that anymore. So anymore, what we'll do is we'll just post them online, and we might have a 1 or 2 page summary in our workshop book, and then give you the links to go online, because it's just so many pages. But that's been going on for the last several years. And the problem now is, and to your point, Darren, about these rebates, Bayer and especially BASF are the two companies that are most known for rebate programs. Well, they are the two companies that got substantially bigger in the last couple of years. So that's maybe part of why you feel that way, that there are more rebate programs. I don't know. There are a lot. I guess it doesn't matter whether you prepay, you don't prepay. Just take a look at the rebate programs and make sure you're taking advantage of those. I will tell you, part of the reason that some companies, I'm not saying all, but some companies have done rebate programs in the past is because many of the rebate programs go unclaimed. So make sure that if you are buying something that qualifies for a rebate, you get your money.
Okay. With that, let's jump into the Ag PhD mailbag.
It's now mailbag time with Brian and Darren.
Right, I'm going to get you thinking right off the bat here, Brian. Let's go with the wheat question, and we've got one from Kevin in West Central Minnesota. He said, now that it's prepay season, I'm revisiting what I should be spraying on my wheat next year post-emerge. I'm in a corn-soybean-wheat rotation, so I'm spraying an HPPD in my corn, and I have been doing the same in my wheat. Now, just from things I've heard from you and doing my own research, Wide Match might be an alternate product for me that doesn't have an HPPD in it, just to get different modes of action out there and try and address my weeds. However, here's my weed spectrum. I'm wondering if there'd be something to mix with the Wide Match to do the job right. I've got lamb's quarters, pigweed, and water hemp, which and pigweed, I guess, same kinds of things.
No. Stick with Husky. That's just the way you got to go. So Bucktrill is okay. I mean, it's a combination of HPPD and Bucktrill. Bucktrill is okay, and then you've got Husky in there. But in wheat, that is by far the best when you've got pigweeds and lamb's quarters. Now, if you're that worried about it, throw some Sharpen out there pre-emerge, and then that will control probably 80 or maybe even 90% of those weeds before you ever even have to spray that product post-emerge. But if you're getting 100% weed control in your wheat, you have zero worries anyway, because a dead weed cannot become a resistant weed.
Yep, I agree. I think you got to take the best product that you've got out there, and in this case, it's Husky or Talonor. Thanks for the question, Kevin. And by the way, I would not go with straight 240. That was his other question, is what do you think about just running straight MCPA? And it's just a little hard on the wheat. There's a reason why all the guys in corn have switched away from 240 just as quickly as there were alternatives back a generation ago. In wheat, for some reason, it's hung on, mostly because it's just been cheap. But you would definitely look at a difference with a Talonor or a Husky in terms of crop safety.
Yeah, and also don't forget, the odds are extremely high that on your farm in the last 30 years, you've used way more growth regulators like 2,4-D and dicamba, and Stinger, for that matter, that's in that same chemical family, than you have an HPPD and Bucktrill.
Okay, let's jump to a drainage question. This is from John, and John writes, let's say that drainage tile just isn't in the cards right now, and I get it. A lot of guys are going to be in that situation, John, with the ground being frozen up. John said, I'm wondering, what would a deep tillage ripper that goes down about 14 inches or so provide for benefits? Would it be kind of the way to go if you can't get the tile in this year?
Well, it could help a little bit, but it's only going to help if compaction is part of your issue. The problem with what we're trying to accomplish when we put tile in the ground is lowering the water table. Let's say that the water table is at 10 inches deep. Is deep tillage going to help that at all? No, it's not going to make one bit of difference. So you can't lower the water table by just doing some tillage out there. So no, it might help you a little bit to alleviate some compaction and allow a little more moisture to get down to the 14-inch level sooner, But in terms of it really making a big difference on your farm, not much. Now, the question that you said frost, Aaron, I don't think, I mean, maybe that's what he meant, but I'm positive. I feel like what he was trying to say was, I can't afford it or I don't have approvals for it, getting that tiling done. I would just say, look, I talk to farmers every day, and almost invariably every day, we're talking about dollars and cents anymore and cutting costs and all these things. And I'll have some guy, just like today, it wasn't 2 hours ago, and I had some guy say this to me. We're talking about fertility and herbicides and all this stuff. And he just kind of almost out of the blue goes, well, just the best money spent is on tile. I go, I agree with you 100%. So you got to get the drainage fixed. If the drainage is not fixed, all the other things you're going to spend money on are not going to give you the same return that they should. And by the way, you're not going to have as healthy a soil, so you can't get all the free things that are in the soil working for you and working to your benefit like they could if you just simply get that water table down and get more oxygen in your soil by having great drainage.
All right. Thanks a lot for the question, John. I really appreciate that. Got another question, Brian. This one's about soil fertility and specifically sulfur. The question is, what's the maximum amount of sulfur I can apply each year to my soil? Here's what my situation is. I've got a high pH caused by sodium from irrigation. My pH is in the 7.5 to 8 range. I've got about 3% base saturation sodium. I've also got 22% base saturation magnesium, 70% calcium, yep, and only 2.5% potassium. So I'd like to build my potassium up. I'm putting an extra 300 pounds of potash out there each year, variable rate across the field.
Yep.
I also variable rated elemental sulfur to address the pH at 500 pounds. I've got tile out there, systematically tiled every 30 to 45 feet, so I can move things through my soil. So I've got, here is 500 pounds of elemental. I also put on a ton of gypsum, which would have 250 pounds of sulfur. And I was thinking about using ammonium sulfate for 70% of my nitrogen needs for about 140 pounds and 160 pounds of sulfur. Do you think I'm getting crazy here with 860 total pounds of sulfur out there in some areas of the field?
It's not going to hurt your crop. But let's just say this. Let's go back to the root cause of the problem. The problem here is we're getting too much sodium in that ground. So I would look at, can I treat that water and take care of the water as it goes so I don't continue to add to the problem? Since he's got drainage, since he's already doing some elemental sulfur and all these things, I might let those things play out. Now, if you really want to use ammonium sulfate as part of your nitrogen source, you certainly can. But, I mean... if it's me, I'm just saying, hey, I don't really need any more sulfur. I got all kinds of sulfur, so I might just go urea or 28% or something like that. That's probably what I would do if it was me, at least for this year, because you've put these other sources of sulfur out there. One other comment that I would make real quick is I'd stair step what rate of elemental sulfur you're using rather than just going 500 pounds or 0 pounds. We are doing something, too, based on what the pH is, and we work our way up in about 15 or 25-pound increments.
Yeah, to be fair, he said they're going up to 500 pounds, and they are variable rating it.
Oh, okay.
So they are kind of taking that same type of approach, and I don't know how much variable rate there is in there. But I loved another comment that he had made. I'm not worried about the cost this year. We've put this off too long, and now we got to get things done. So anyway, good luck to you, and hopefully you can get things turned around. I agree with Brian. We've got to address that irrigation water quality and see if there's something that we can do to handle that before that sodium hits the soil. We had a fun show talking about prepay and some of the risks and benefits about it. I want to thank you for listening and ask you to join us again each weekday for more Ag PhD Radio.